The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Lots to get through today. A little later on, Jules and Shaq will be here to reflect on Tottenham's game against Burnley. Also, Sid to give us his opinion on the first Clasico of the season. We'll start, though, in Italy as Milan stretch their lead at the top of the table after a 3-3 draw against Roma. Gab Marcotti here to discuss this game. Gab, the second half, particularly the end of this game, was just completely bonkers. You just felt the referee lost complete control of it. Two big calls, both of course involving penalties. The first one I thought was incredibly telling because Roma won it, but Pedro, who was brought down, Pedro didn't even appeal for it, Gab.
No, and in fact, you could hear the Milan players. Why don't you take a look? Go to the VAR. Where's the VAR? The joke that was doing the rounds, as you know, Italy entering lockdown restrictions, the joke was that the VAR had gone in lockdown before kickoff and therefore wasn't active in this. The referee, Giacomandi, not just the two penalty decisions. You can argue whether the second one was a makeup call of some kind or whether he was just bad. He will not want to watch this again. This was one of the worst officiating decisions for both sides. I don't think anybody can claim to be favored in this one. Yeah. But one of the worst refereeing decisions we've seen in a while.
I know, and you used the phrase there, and it's got to be a makeup call, hasn't it? The Çalhanoğlu pen.
You would think so. I mean, again, we don't know who's in the referee's ear, but I like to think the god of referees spoke to him and said, hey, boy, Giacomandi, man, you done screwed up here. You got to be fixing this. I honestly don't know. I thought we saw a tremendous game.
Yeah.
Refereeing mistakes aside, we saw moments of real skill. And, if you're a Milan fan, you'll feel like you dropped 2 points, perhaps. But equally, Roma showed that they have a ton of fight. And for me, one of the best, cleverest managers out there in Paulo Fonseca.
Quite rightly, Gab, you picked, from a neutral's point of view, this was entertaining. Referee decisions aside, both teams showing glimpses of quality. Of course, it finishes a point apiece. As you mentioned, though, Milan will be disappointed. They will feel this is 2 points dropped. And we talk about the fact that how far they can go this season. These are sort of the matches you feel they need to get done.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And look, I mean, in the end, you know, the equalizer coming off of an assist, albeit an entirely intentional one from Zlatan, you know, you can chalk that down to bad luck. Obviously, no Gigi Donnarumma between the sticks for Milan, a victim of a COVID positive test the day of the game. I think that's a blow. That's something that rattles you when it happens so close to kickoff. But no excuses. Look, I go back to this. You know, Ibra and Simon Kjær aside, this is a very young team, whether it's Salamakers, Rafael Leao, who I thought played really well, Calabria turning in a shift, Benacer and Kessié in midfield. You know, these are young players. And I think, you know, in a game like this against the Roma side, which on the other hand is pretty much filled with veterans, certainly going forward, if you look at Jaco, Mkhitaryan and Pedro, maybe they paid a bit of a price for inexperience as well.
And we talk, I feel every time after Milan win and Zlatan scores, you talk about the fact this Milan side need to be able to learn to be able to play without Zlatan, to win games without him. Again, emphasizing that today with 2 goals.
Yeah, and look, I think I'm right in saying, this is Zlatan's third start in a row. Since coming back, because he played in the derby, obviously he played against Celtic in the Europa League. I'm wondering, you know, given Zlatan's venerable age, and I know that age is just a number, and you know he's Highlander, he doesn't age, Benjamin Button, whatever you want to say. You know, once you get all the stereotypes out of the way, the reality is that for a center forward of his age to play 3 games in the space of 8 days. you know, not always a great idea. So Milan will need to wean themselves off him. The issue they have is that until Ante Rebic is fit and ready to go and ready to play from the start, there really is no alternative up front at center forwards. Rafael Leao doing a good job on the wing. I think Pioli loathes to move him inside. But these are the big calls, I think, that Pioli's going to have to make at some point, because you can't expect Zlatan to carry the can all season long if he doesn't get a break now and again.
Thanks for the moment, Gab. Gab will be back later to talk Champions League. But as I mentioned, then AC Milan with that point too clear of Napoli in second. On Monday, Spurs taking all 3 points with a 1-0 victory over Burnley. It wasn't particularly pretty, but in the end, the Son-Kane combination proved to be worth 3 points once again. As Shakra and Jules with us to reflect on this game. Jules, not the best from Spurs, but obviously 3 points. Are they going to win the title now?
Well, you never know in this season. It's so open, but they certainly showed something different to what they've been showing so far this season, especially away from home when they were so incredibly clinical going forward, so devastating. We saw the game, obviously, at United. We saw the game as well at Southampton, for example. Mm. And yet, this time, not space to run into so much, or at least they didn't use it as well, against the Burnley team. As we know, very aggressive, very solid, very well organised and well drilled. And yet, they still found a way. I find it really fascinating the way they can still manage to find a win like this. Kane and Son, again, this time on a corner, on set pieces. I think one shot on target, and that was it. And I think when you've got that degree of efficiency, when as well defensively, you know, you're not too bad like they were tonight. I thought, okay, Burnley had a couple of good shots, but that was it. I think you can certainly look far ahead because you're in a really good shape.
This obviously this is what they needed after that draw against West Ham, Shaka, just to get a win under their belt and move on.
Yeah, it was an ugly win, one that they clearly had to work hard for in a way that they haven't been used to over recent weeks. Spurs have been scoring goals in bucket loads. But all of a sudden against Burnley, they found chances hard to come by. And credit Burnley for that. Listen, Burnley are struggling this season and they went back to their old selves. 4-4-2, as strict as it comes. Wing-backs don't bother to bomb on. They just sit there and make life difficult for Spurs' front three and then give Spurs the wide areas to cross the ball if they wanted to, because they know the only player who could get any joy in the air against Burnley's back four is Harry Kane. So they only had the one thing to worry about. From Spurs' point of view, I was a little bit disappointed that they didn't see this coming and they didn't adjust. I thought Spurs' best chance in the first half came when Lucas Moura made a run from the right all the way to the left and the wing back tracked him and it opened space up on the right-hand side. Yet still, you didn't see those runs coming at all, again before the end of the game. In the second half, the best chance came, aside from the goal, from Son making a run from deep and Sissoko slipping him in. Again, I just felt that Spurs weren't that creative against a very rigid and hard-working back four. But they got the job done. And from a usual Mourinho set piece where one goes to the ball, one cuts across the face of the goalkeeper. It worked a treat. That's what it took. Spurs were the better team for the 90 minutes. They're fully deserving of the 3 points. But I just thought Spurs could have done a little bit more in their attacking third.
Let's make you cringe then, Jules. 6 games in, who's finishing higher, Spurs or Arsenal?
That's a good call. I mean, we've had that discussion before where I still think that he could be really tight at the top, whether he's first and second or for that top four. But I think Spurs are looking in really good shape, better shape than Arsenal when you watch Arsenal against Leicester, for example, on Sunday night. And then obviously Spurs at Burnley, like we said with Shaka, in a difficult game, and they still managed to come out winners without having not much created at all. So certainly Spurs look in better shape now, look a better, you know, a better bet if you want to. And when you look at it, Lo Celso is only slowly coming back from injury. He came on late in the game, but Mourinho loves him and he brings something a bit different in that sort of number 10 position. You know, you've got Gareth Bale as well, who at some point will hit form and will be a really good asset to have from Mourinho, either as a starter or from the bench. So I think if even if you look at the other options that Mourinho has, it's pretty good and pretty decent. So, you know, just for now, I would say I think Spurs can finish higher. And I think wow. they can finish higher than a lot of teams in the league this season.
Well, let's take that to the next step then, shall we, Mr. Power Rankings? Let's just focus on the English team, Shaka. When it comes to favourites to win this title, which everyone agree I think is going to be quite open this year, where are Spurs?
Favourites to win this title right now, I think Spurs are third, in all honesty. And there's... of course, there's a lot of caveats to that. How Liverpool cope without Van Dijk, I still think that they're favourites to win it. City surely are going to get better. They can't be as bad as we see them to start this season. And then everybody else has just so many questions. Whether it's Chelsea and can all those signings gel? Jules touched rightly so on Arsenal. Leicester's been inconsistent. And Jules is also right to point out that Harry Kane, Gareth Bale on the bench, not used. But he certainly, if he finds form and he finds fitness, let's say by January for the run into the end of the season, I think it at the very least puts Spurs above the others in that chasing pack and short odd favourites to at least finish third.
Boys, thank you very much. It rounds up what was pretty much a rubbish weekend in the Premier League. No real standout matches. By the way, it finished Brighton 1, West Brom 1. But after all of that, it's Everton and Liverpool who are joint top of the league. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Well, let's welcome to the show now, shall we? Sid Lowe said it's the first time we've had the opportunity to talk about El Clasico, and you may be relieved to know, I don't know, that we're not going to talk about the VAR decision, because I think now people have established their opinion on it and us talking about it isn't going to change their mind. What I do want to talk about is what happened after that decision, after Sergio Ramos scored that penalty. And I think Lionel Messi won a lot of sympathisers over the summer, obviously, clearly wanting to leave the club, clearly fallen out of love with the board and the president in particular. And I think people get that. But I think what would be very difficult for them to comprehend is that you've still got 25 minutes to go in the biggest match of the season against your biggest rivals, and on a stage in which you want your captain to step up and take control and to get everybody together, he didn't do that. In fact, you could argue he did the opposite.
Yeah, I think this is a big part of the analysis of the Clásico, and obviously I would expand it beyond Messi as well, because so much of the focus has been on the impact of that penalty. So much of the focus has been on the, if you like, the irritation from Barcelona about the fact that the penalty was given, and I think that overlooks this very fundamental question that you're posing now, which is there was half an hour to go. And in half an hour, now obviously there's no guarantee that you find a way back in. By definition, of course, the game is harder than it was before, and you've got a Real Madrid team that's now playing more defensively, and perhaps you have fewer spaces to try and exploit. There's much less room to try and play. But the reaction from Barcelona was almost non-existent. And it was almost non-existent, I think, throughout the side. But you're quite right. It was particularly poor from Messi. I thought Messi had actually played really quite well for an hour. But from the moment of that penalty onwards, there wasn't really a rebellion, wasn't there? Was there? There was no real fight. There was no real sense that, OK, we can turn this round. There wasn't a clear idea. There wasn't really very much character either. And it's curious as well, because in that half an hour, when Messi did far less than he'd done in the previous hour, well, that was actually the time at which his teammates sort of looked for him more. And I think there you see a problem. And I don't necessarily think you see a problem solely in terms of the fact that Messi then didn't lead the team on, although obviously that by definition is a problem. I think you also saw a problem in the fact that the team kind of emotionally, in terms of personality, in terms of characteristics and so on, at a time in which they need to chase the game, they have no other plan except to look to Messi and see what he can do. And of course, if Messi then doesn't do it, Barcelona have very, very little. And I think you're right. I think you can ask very, very big questions about Barcelona, and in particular about the man who is supposed to lead them, and in particular about the man whose teammates appear to be looking for him to lead them. And Messi in that last half an hour, yes, it's true, against a more packed defence, did not really perform.
But this isn't against a Real Madrid of old. This is against a Real Madrid who leaked goals against Shakhtar, who lost against, obviously, Cadiz as well. Leading into this, is Messi at Barcelona turning into Messi at Argentina?
I think that is a really interesting parallel to draw. And I honestly don't know the answer. But I do think that it is worth talking about how for a very, very long time, when there were question marks hanging over Messi in terms of his significance for the Argentinian national team, those question marks indeed about leadership, which I always felt were a little bit facile, actually, to be perfectly honest with you. But those question marks were there, and people talked about whether or not he performed at the kind of level that he should do. There was always a sense, particularly in Catalonia, particularly across Spain, that Barcelona was his refuge. Barcelona was the place that he went to kind of get away from that, the place where everybody played to him and played from him, the place where everyone appreciated him, that everyone kind of welcomed him in. And watching the last international break and watching the smiles, and again, this is superficial, but watching the smiles from Argentina, watching the sense of importance in that Argentinian team, and knowing what is now the case in Catalonia, I think it's very tempting, isn't it, to look at those two scenarios and say to yourself, hang on, have these two swapped sides now? Has Messi gone the other way? Is the refuge now the Argentinian national team from Barcelona? One thing we do know, of course, because he said it repeatedly, because he tried to leave in the summer, is that this is not where he wanted to be. Now, that's not to say that this situation can't be made good. That's not to say that long term he doesn't stay for the rest of his career. It's not to say that he will not be successful. But we know for a fact, because he said so repeatedly and very, very publicly and very directly, he did not want to be here.
If I'm a fan, I'll say tough. I'll say, this is your situation. This is where you are now. You are still the captain of my club, and I still want you to step up when is necessary. I don't expect you to put in swashbuckling performances as maybe you have done in the past, but in a big game, I want you to be the visible leader.
Yeah, and I think, of course, that's part of the question mark that we all had in the summer when he announced that he wanted to leave, and then when he announced that he was staying, but only staying, and he made this very, very clear publicly, because there was no way out, because the only way out was through a court case which he might not win and which would have been extremely damaging for everybody. But at the same time, it's curious, despite that and despite those doubts and the question marks about commitment. But I think, you know what, I think more than commitment, I think it's question marks about his emotional state, question marks about his if you like, his subconscious level of commitment, rather than the question of whether he goes onto the pitch and tries. I think most people were given the benefit of the doubt on that. I think most Barcelona fans, partly, of course, because of what he's done for so many years, and that sense that they owe him, that sense that they believe in him, I think still most Barcelona fans would look at him and would say, he's not the first person we'd be pointing the finger at. And even those who do point the finger at Messi would say, yeah, but this is partly a product of a whole series of factors building over the last 2 or 3 years at least, almost certainly over the last 5 or 6 years, but possibly maybe even over the last 7, 8, 9 years. And so I think while you're right that fans will maybe look at him and say, look, I want you to be committed. I want you to fight. I want you to go onto the pitch. I want you to perform. I want you to lead. To be honest with you, I think most fans probably believe that he will and does and is continuing to do those things. I don't think that's necessarily a doubt now. The doubt, I guess, is more about his emotional commitment, whether there's some subconscious kind of tailing off of that degree of commitment.
I think every football fan loves watching Messi at his complete best, and I hope come the end of the season he's got 50 goals and 50 assists and he's been brilliant and he's scored amazing runs. What if he doesn't, Sid?
Yeah. I don't know. And you're right, everybody loves watching him play. I think it would be a really awful way for his time at Barcelona to come to an end. That said, the way it looked like it was coming to an end would have been a pretty bad way as well. You know, the last game was an 8-2, the kind of the bitterness that would have led to the departure. Obviously, I think everyone wishes in an ideal world that José Mario Bartomeu, the president, and his board get forced out, that Messi has some degree of trust in the people coming in, that those people are competent and build a good team around him, and that Barcelona fans get, I mean, who knows, what would it be, another 2 years, another 3 years maybe out of him, possibly even more, who knows how long it would be, and he continues to play well. But you're right, I think there is that risk, isn't there, that this final season becomes, if you like, a season too far. It becomes a sort of a drift towards the end that wouldn't necessarily be a complete disaster in terms of the way the season plays out, but it would just be kind of a slipping away. And as well, the other thing is, and of course we don't know how this will play out yet between now and the end of the season, it's perfectly plausible, isn't it, that that's a slipping away in silence without fans in the stadium. And I think that too would be a very sad way for this to end.
I'm very conscious that there were 10 other players on the pitch. In fact, of course, there were more players for the substitutes as well that came very late in this game. A lot of people talk about Ronald Koeman sitting on his hands, Sid.
Yeah, and look, I think you can go further than that because, you know, as you've already said, when the penalty goes in, 25, 30 minutes to go, add additional time, I think it was about 33, 34 minutes to go. You can make changes at that point if you want to. You don't need to do them straight away, but you can make changes at that point, or you can make the changes at any time for the next 33 minutes. That's a lot of time to be dealing with. Some of the problems that Barcelona had, I think, were already clear. Some of them became more clear over the next 5 or 6 minutes as Real Madrid settled into a tight, organised, slightly more defensive approach, and Barcelona was struggling to find spaces through there. At that point, you can make some changes. One of them, I think, was already fairly clear earlier in the game, and that was that Pedri wasn't having a particularly good time of it as a narrow right-sided attacking midfielder. I don't think it's his natural role. I don't think he was particularly happy in it, but potentially, although we'll never know this for sure, potentially he was overawed by it being a Clásico at the age of just 17, although personally I think it was more about the system and the structure than about that. You can maybe think about making a change through the middle of the midfield where De Jong and Busquets wasn't particularly working, or possibly even of Coutinho. But what happens, of course, is that nothing happens until the 81st minute, at which point there are three changes made at once. And those are three changes of basically saying, OK, let's push them forwards onto the pitch. And then, of course, to make that even more, if you like, of a kind of a statement of, right, all of my attacking power on the pitch at the same time, 5 minutes later, Martin Braithwaite goes on as well. And in this time, you've lost Sergio Busquets goes off, Jordi Alba goes off. Obviously, not everyone who's gone off is defensive, so you lose Ansu Fati as well, which, by the way, is in itself questionable, taking off the one player who seemed most likely to score. But when you make these changes, what happens is, what is, in my opinion at least, although, you know, I'm perfectly prepared for people to disagree with me on this, in my opinion at least, a structure, a formation that doesn't convince anyway gets weakened even further when you do that. You know, you take off players, you break up the structure, you put everyone up front, everyone you've got onto the pitch, let's put people forward. Well, just having more forwards doesn't make you more attacking. Someone's got to get the ball to those players. You've got to be able to have the ability to withstand the counter-attacks of the other team. And the best way of looking at this is to say that while Barcelona created very, very little from the penalty onwards, Real Madrid created little as well, partly because they weren't looking to. What happens with those three changes? Well, immediately after those three changes, between then and the end of the game, there are three very clear chances. And all three of them are for Real Madrid. None of them are for Barcelona. Griezmann comes on, for example, and touches the ball just once. So one thing's for sure, it didn't work. Now, whether that's because the whole idea of doing that was completely flawed or a series of other elements, but the bottom line is, it did not work. And to be honest with you, doing it that late and doing it in that kind of, that sort of big sense of, right, everything on the pitch, I don't think it was ever likely to work.
And it's not going to let off now for Barcelona because, of course, in the Champions League, they're up against Juventus, another proper test that Ronald Koeman would really have loved to avoid.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he probably would have loved to avoid it. I mean, one thing I think we should probably say in terms of the context surrounding Koeman is that everybody knows that this is a work in progress. You know, it's only week 7 of the league season. Everybody knows that a whole load of the players that Koeman wanted to come in this summer didn't come in, that he wants to change the team, that he's bringing young players through. And most people, by the way, did applaud the decision to play 2 17-year-olds. At the very least, they took this as a sign that Koeman was brave, that he wasn't necessarily going to be driven by names. The fact that he left Griezmann on the bench was seen as broadly a positive thing, albeit post-game, maybe you can question that. But you're right, you still don't want to go from that Clásico into facing Juventus with a team that so far has not quite found its feet. And I personally think that for all the discussion of the forwards, we come back to that double pivot position in midfield with De Jong and Busquets, which I thought was horribly overrun by Real Madrid. And I think the nature of that formation, we come back to what I was saying about I wasn't convinced even before that change, which is a 4-2-3-1. But what basically happens is it's a 4 and a 2, and then a big gap, and then four forwards in a kind of chaotic swirl, a splodge at the top of the pitch. And of course that means that when you've got runners either side of the midfield too, they get an awful lot of space to run through. Look at Valverde on the first goal for Real Madrid, look at Modric on the third goal for Real Madrid. They're very similar runs from very similar spaces, and I think De Jong and I think Busquets are really don't either have the legs or the structure around them or the positional qualities within this formation to prevent that from happening.
Sid, is the word splodge in any of those books behind you?
I'm gonna start looking through them now, see if I can find one that's got the word splodge in it.
Sid Lowe, as always, thank you very much for your time. Of course, a big game this weekend in the Champions League, Juventus against Barcelona. We're still awaiting, as we go to air, news on whether or not Cristiano Ronaldo will be available for that game.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Well, let's focus more now on that game, shall we, between Juventus and Barcelona. Both Gab and Jules back with us. Gab, you told me not to ask you this, but is Ronaldo going to play?
Who's coming? He needs to test negative.
Right. So will he test negative?
He's based. I have no idea. I am not the god of COVID-19. Obviously, Juventus want him to play. He certainly wants to play. I'm imagining he's sitting there, you know, stuffing a big swab up his nose every hour until he gets, the requisite number of negative tests in.
Okay.
It is very much touch and go. And from Juve's perspective, they expect a definitive answer on the day.
Right. Let's talk about the game itself. What a great time to be playing Barcelona, Gab.
Yeah, or you could turn around and say, you know, good time to play Juventus as well, given the recent draws. I think, though, from Juve's perspective, clearly they're going to feel that something needs to change a little bit. They need to seize control of games. The thing about Pirlo is he has so many options and permutations going into this game that, you know, it almost becomes tricky to choose the right one. Encouraging news, looks like Leo Bonucci will be fit, not 100% confirmed yet. I think that is important just to settle down that defense, if indeed he is fit. Beyond that, he's got a big call to make in the fullback position. Obviously, no Alexandro. You certainly don't want Bernardeschi there. We could see the youngster Frabotta again. And of course, further up the pitch, do you start Kulusevski? I think on the evidence of the second 45 minutes, you probably do. But if you do that, you know, you're not going to leave out Dybala and you're not going to leave out Morata, which means, you know, that puts further pressure on your midfield.
Meanwhile, from a Barcelona perspective, Jules, I don't reckon any of us could predict the starting 11 for this game. And I don't think Koeman even knows it at the moment, given the state of affairs that we saw at the weekend.
Yes, I think you're right. I think he's still searching, looking for the right formula, the right personnel as well. I thought he made a few mistakes in his starting 11 against Real Madrid, for sure, starting with Pedri, who I don't think, especially in that position, was ready for a game like this. Coutinho, it looked like picked up an injury in that game, so would be missing for the Juventus clash. Does that mean Griezmann comes back into the team? Do you start Dembele to bring a bit more pace to your attack, a bit more more skillful player who will take on Juventus defenders. And we've just said, Gab just said, the Juventus defense, we're not really sure yet how it looks, what it will look like, and especially our fullbacks. So there's, that could be the weakness for Juventus. So do you attack those fullbacks with Dembele on one side, on Sufati on the other, or whoever? I think that there's a big key there in the game, but you're right. I don't think Ronald Koeman knows what to do in midfield, what to do in attack either. And at the back, well, we know that Piqué picked up that very stupid red card against Ferencváros, which means that he will be suspended for that huge game, so you also have to replace him. So I think there's a lot of headaches right now for Ronald Koeman.
Let's get some predictions, boys, that will then rub in your face when you're wrong. Gab?
I would lean towards Juve in this one, simply because I think they have more solutions, and because I simply don't know. Funny, Jules didn't even mention Antoine Griezmann. He seems to be the forgotten man.
He'll start crying.
There, so... Exactly. So I don't want to rub it in. But I do expect to see some pride in a performance out of Barcelona and out of Messi. So I'm going to go Juve 2-1.
Jules?
I think neither of those teams can defend. Anyway, we saw that at the weekend again. And I think there will be loads of goals. I go like a crazy 3-3.
Oh, I'm in a 3-3. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Just a reminder, a lot more from Gab and Jules. They're joined by Sid as well on the latest edition of their show, which you can download now.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Meanwhile, four German teams once again flying the flag for the Bundesliga over Tuesday and Wednesday in the Champions League. Lokomotiv Moscow against Bayern Munich. Then you've got Gladbach taking on Real Madrid. Borussia Dortmund against Zenit. And Manchester United against Leipzig, as we welcome into the show Archie Rintat. Archie, it's interesting to have you on. And I don't really want to talk about Bayern Munich or Borussia Dortmund because none of those games seem that interesting. However, Manchester United against Leipzig will be a real test for both sides.
I think, particularly given the run that Leipzig had in last year's Champions League, reaching the semi-final, it's another good test for Julian Nagelsmann, and particularly going into the competition without Timo Werner, without Patrick Schick, losing 44 goals from his side last season, and you've not really seen it at all affecting them in the Bundesliga so far. I think that Nagelsmann would be the perfect choice to be the next coach of Manchester United. I think he would do a better job than Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I think that you see the way that Leipzig are so much more tactically flexible, and I think that that's something that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer doesn't quite have. So I've been really impressed by the way that during his career, you've seen it at Hoffenheim, you've seen it now at Leipzig, that Nagelsmann continually loses his best players, but is able to still form a very cohesive attacking unit. Coherent, I think, I mean. Cohesive's to do with DIY, isn't it?
You're asking completely the wrong man. I wasn't really listening anymore, Archie, don't worry. who's a favourite for you? Can Leipzig go there and take all 3 points?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The question for me is, how are they going to set up? Because we've seen in the Premier League particularly how Manchester United struggle against deep-lying opponents. But when they have that space in behind, they do have the individual quality to hurt you. So I think that Leipzig, though, are able to control the game to such a good extent that I can't really see Julian Nagelsmann wanting to sit back that much. That's not the style that he's very comfortable with. I've seen him give ground in games to against Bayern Munich before. I don't know whether he'll give Manchester United quite the same respect in that regard, because I don't think he'll see them as quite as dangerous an opponent as Bayern are. But I think that, without a doubt, Julian Nagelsmann and Leipzig, they're not going there for a point.
Meanwhile, Borussia Mönchengladbach taking on Real Madrid. Real Madrid coming into this game off the back of that victory against Barcelona in El Clasico. How much a test will the German outfit be for Zinedine Zidane's side?
Well, it's funny because I heard quite a few commentators saying after Borussia's 3-2 win over Mainz that, oh, if they play like that against Real Madrid, they'll get killed. And it's like, did you see what happened to Real against Shakhtar Donetsk? It's not like Real are in the sharpest form of their life. That said, I think it is obviously going to be a step up. You would expect a reaction from Real. Okay, they're coming off the back of that Clasico win at the weekend. But Gladbach have not looked great from open play so far this season. 6 of their 8 goals in the Bundesliga have come from set pieces. And Marcus Thuram is somebody that Real Madrid are going to have to watch closely. Mm. In each of Gladbach's last 4 games, he's earned them a penalty. So I think it's about Gladbach being able to show a little bit more going forward. Against Inter last week, I saw that game and for long periods, it took until the 60th minute for them to actually have a shot on target, and that was the goal. So they need to improve in that sense. I don't think there's quite been enough aggression, enough courage that they've been showing, but there's no reason why they can't get a result against this Real side. It's not the strongest side that we've seen from Zinedine Zidane in the past few years, that's for sure. So I'm intrigued to see how Marco Rosa will approach this, because the fact that Shakhtar beat Real really has opened up this group a lot.
Just a reminder, the Bundesliga live on ESPN this season. It all starts on Friday, the next round of matches. Schalke taking on Stuttgart. Then on Saturday, Bayern Munich in action at 10:30 alongside Borussia Dortmund, who are away against Bielefeld. That's it then. That brings to the end of today's show. Of course, Champions League will dominate the agenda over the next couple of days. But before I say goodbye, just a reminder to stay tuned for Extra Time with Shaka and Jules. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. As always, thank you very much for your tweets. Shaka Hislop and Julian Laurent with us to answer your questions. Jules is on, so there must be a question about Griezmann. Jules, will we see Griezmann move clubs next season or during the winter transfer window? He's not starred for Barcelona's past 2 games, in case you weren't paying attention, Jules.
Yeah, I mean, I saw that. He really thought he would start in the Clásico. He didn't. Barca are saying like they're not going to sell him, you know, he's not for sale. Maybe he would want to leave, that's another issue. The thing is, I think he really wants to succeed there. I think he really wants to become a big player for them. This is a club that, as you know, he wanted to join before, didn't happen, then happened again. But I think he really wants to make it there. It's just, I'm not sure. I think one, time is running out, and two, I'm not sure that will happen anyway. So maybe he would have to reconsider at some point and maybe decide to go, or at least see what's out there, if he can maybe move to somewhere else. But it's just a situation where you're not really sure how he would come out of it, how the club would come out of it, and what's going to happen.
You do feel if he'll make it there, he'll make it anywhere. Meanwhile, Shaka, did Shaka impede Schmeichel? How did you react to players trying to impede you? This, of course, the goal that was chalked off in the Arsenal-Leicester game.
Yeah, I didn't think there was much impeding going on there, personally. But it's a little bit different now. But it was part of the territory back in the day. You would always have at least one player on you. If you used to come for crosses a lot, the opposition would put 2 or 3 just to stand in a little box around you, so you couldn't come out anyway. So you'd be getting calls all day long by the rules we saw on the weekend. But it's just kind of part and parcel of how the game was played back then, and you had to figure out a way out of that little box. Simple as that.
And of course, we spoke about this before, you could get away with a little bit more back then as well, Shaka. You could go up for a high ball with the old high knee up, couldn't you, to catch the striker or the elbows as well. Did you ever really take someone out?
I don't remember really taking somebody out. I do remember playing. I think playing for West Ham. Coming a long way out for one. We played Coventry, and I can't remember the Coventry had two Egyptian strikers, I think, at the time. And I came a long way to the edge of my box, and realized I wasn't getting there. So I just made, and again, you could get away with this back in the day. I was like, I am just going to punch him square in the head here. I hope it is enough to put him off. And that's exactly what happened. I just leathered him right to the top of the head. His header went wide. Goal kick. Happy days.
Wow, Shaq. That's brilliant. If in doubt, swing a punch. That's today's lesson, kids.
Yeah.
Jules, without trying to be biased.
Good.
Sorry. Without trying to be biased, where do you think PSG would finish if they're in the Premier League?
So without being biased, I think, well, if I say they can win it, then I'm going to get abused so much tomorrow and everything like that, so I'm not going to say that.
Don't buckle, Jules.
They finish top three. I think they finish top three, sometimes third, sometimes second, sometimes first, eh? That's the best answer I can give you.
It's a terrible answer. Last season, for example, last couple of seasons, they'd have finished third, yeah? Behind Liverpool, Manchester City.
Yeah. Certainly so two seasons ago. I think last season they might have finished second behind Liverpool because I don't think City were very good last season at all. Two seasons ago and three seasons ago, I think, third, no problem. This season now, I mean, they're not playing well in France either, but this season it looks quite more open in England. So
anyone
maybe
can win this season. Jules, I know you're a fan of Mesut Ozil. Will we ever see him at a top club again, or is he destined for MLS?
Oh, that's harsh on MLS. You know, he can go to MLS if he wants to be there, if he has the motivation, the right attitude and everything, then I think MLS should welcome him, and I think he could be a good addition to that league. For the rest, it all for me, and it's always been the case with Meza, it always depending on him anyway. How much money he wants, how much he really wants to work hard, to be able to play again in the top league, in a top club. It's all about that. I've always thought it was a lot only down to him anyway. What he really wanted, what kind of mood he was in, if he really wanted to work hard, if he didn't, or the opposite, if he was not ready to work hard, if he was, you know, ready to be a passenger, if he wanted to be a leader. All those questions, they're still very relevant now. And I think maybe that was part of the issue at Arsenal. And certainly if he wants to go to another top club, let's say in Germany, if he wants to come back home and go to a top club again there, he will have to show that he's ready for it. You can't just go, especially on the money he's on, and be a passenger or just be there and say like, I'm just happy to train like this, easy, not really taking maybe seriously, not being, you know, fully committed. That's not going to work like this. So I think it depends a lot on him.
Shaka, should Liverpool sign Upamecano in the winter transfer window as an immediate replacement for Van Dijk, or wait until the summer for Upamecano's release clause to activate?
Cool. How much is that release clause?
700 million.
well then sign him in January for 600, save yourself 100 million. Right now, let's see how Liverpool cope without Van Dijk. As you mentioned, in this extra time alone, the league is wide open. And maybe they have enough to cope. Certainly we'll know by January. If not, sign him. I think Upamecano is an incredible talent. And many big clubs would be chasing it. If you can get yourself to the head of the queue in January, it might be worth your while. But who knows? Brilliant. Now, that all depends on
good, thanks,
Jack. I'm just saying. It depends on what you're getting for and what that release clause is.
Well, let's ask decision. Our resident journalist who should know these figures, Jules.
Is it 80 million? I think it's 80 million euros.
Don't sound that convinced.
It increased to the 60 million that it was before. But the thing with Upamecano, one, let's say Leipzig at top of the table in January, good luck to signing Upamecano from them, because they will say, hang on a minute, we can compete with Bayern.
Yeah, Jules, they let Timo Werner go when they could have won the Champions League.
No. The release clause for Timo Werner was paid, and then it happened that unfortunately, because of the pandemic, the Champions League was played outside of the season's date. So to keep him, a lot of things needed to happen. They needed his permission, Chelsea's permission. It was complicated, but in a normal season, he would have been there and he would have played with them. They didn't sell him when they could have won the Champions League. However, with Upamecano, it could be different for the league. So they might want far more money than what the release clause is, because they say, hang on, it's too important for us, especially in a season where we can actually win something. But I still think that Van Dijk is 29. Go and get Upamecano now. Come on, it makes a lot of sense.
Final question. It's a good one, Shaka. Time to have a go at some journalists. In the light of Pogba's feud with the press, did you ever have problems with the press printing fake news or something else about you that wasn't true?
No. None.
Sure.
Everything the press said.
I thought you.
And it wasn't great.
Shaka, didn't you tell me a story? You called the press
Very
out
true.
Once about something. Or have I completely made that up? Was that somebody else?
I call the press out.
Yeah.
Nah, oh. not I can recall.
Oh, it must be someone else.
I remember a silly story, but that was in the Sun back in my Reading days, and I kind of expected it from the Sun, in all honesty.
Well, what was the story?
So it didn't bother me in the slightest. Huh?
What was the story? You got us intrigued now, Shaq. Was it about punching
people? No, it was ridiculous. We played away to Burnley, I think, and it was freezing cold. And we won 2-1. I actually played quite well. But this report, and I remember the name, a lady by the name of Janine Self, for some reason I remember that still, wrote this long match report talking about how I was from Trinidad and I couldn't cope with the cold weather. Mind you, we just won 2-1 and I just played really well. So it didn't make much sense. But that was the only thing I can remember that really was just so far off the mark that you know, to say it was true. Other than that, you know, I don't recall anything being any more egregious than that.
Janine Self, watch yourself, eh? Jules, have you ever had to apologize for something that you've written?
Oh, so many times. I mean, there's a difference between making something up, like in this case with Pogba and saying that he had quit the national team, and then writing an article where you criticize a player. For example, players, despite what some are saying, they know exactly what's being written about them or said, whether it's on TV or on radio, so they know pretty well. So there's a difference between the two, and they're quite sensitive at times with what's written on them when it's critical about something, not fake news or not making something up. And I remember Djibril Cissé one day when he was still at Auxerre before coming to Liverpool, not happy with something that I wrote, and coming to see me when we were on national team duties and said, John, should we go for a fight? And I was like, I don't think so. Really, and he was really cross. I mean, I had the Auxerre manager calling me and saying, you're a piece of crap.
Wow.
But my story was a great story. It was a really good story as well. And I said to Djibril, I said, come on, man. You know, it was after a game. I still remember it so well. After a game with Auxerre against Marseille, in Marseille as well. And he's from there, obviously. And he missed so many chances, and there were plenty of times where instead of shooting, he should have passed the ball, for example. There were better options than him shooting, but he was so obsessed with scoring against the team that he supported as a kid that I think he lost all sense of awareness and focus and concentration. He was just shooting all the time. Wow. So I wrote a really good piece, and he was not happy at all, man. I laugh about it, and he does laugh about it now, but yeah, on the time he said, should we go for a fight? Like, I will pass on this one, Djibril.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. Would you like to go for a fight, Julian? No, I wouldn't actually today. Thank you, Mr. Cissé.
It's cool, you know. I other things to do as well that day, so
I don't think I've ever had to apologise to footballers for anything else. When I was young, I worked for the BBC and I had to apologise to a young cricketer in Cornwall because I said that he was a cheat. That one didn't go down very well. I was only young. That's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Jules and Shaka, thank you very much. As always, we will be back tomorrow for more. Until then, goodbye.